Thank you for listening to the James Hooper Podcast. This is where you can hear sermons, discussions on various topics, and whatever else I feel like talking about. I trust you'll be encouraged, enlightened, and uplifted by something we say or do. Hang tight. Here we go. I'm going to be speaking this morning on when provision ends. We like to talk about God providing for us. We like to talk about God being there for us and coming through with the miraculous and the miracle supply and all this kind of stuff. We like to talk about that, but God wanted me to share this morning. This is why this direction, this is not the only way God leads and guides. And we sang about that just now in our worship time. Those that joined us online, we sang, "Lead us, God, lead us. You're our shepherd. My life is better. I like it better when I'm following you." So he leads in so many different ways, and this is one of the ways that God leads: when provision ends. So go with me to 1 Kings chapter 17, verses 2 through 9. 1 Kings chapter 17, verses 2 through 9. Then the Lord said to Elijah, now let me give you a little preface here. This is right after he had called fire down from heaven and it consumed the sacrifice. They killed all the prophets of Baal, and Jezebel said, "I'm going to kill you," and he's running. Okay? I'm actually wrong. This is before then. This is when he called down, when he stopped the heavens. This is before then. This is when he stopped the rains from heaven, because we'll see why in a minute. So he had told Ahab, "It's not going to rain until I say it's going to rain again." Then he took off. And so the Lord said to Elijah, "Go to the east and hide by Kereth Brook, near where it enters the Jordan River. Drink from the brook and eat what the ravens bring you, for I have commanded them to bring you food." Thank the Lord for provision. God's the miraculous supply. Thank you, Lord. So Elijah did as the Lord told him and camped beside the brook, Kereth Brook, east of the Jordan. The ravens brought him bread and meat each morning and evening, and he drank from the brook. Hallelujah. We can just stop reading right there. I don't think so. Verse 7 says, "But after a while, the brook dried up, for there was no rainfall anywhere in the land." This is a result of him obeying God, telling Ahab, "It's not going to rain until I say it rains." So sometimes when you're walking in God's obedience, sometimes you have to suffer the consequences everybody else is suffering. And so then the Lord said to Elijah, he says, "Go and live in the village of Zarephath, near the city of Sidon. I have instructed a widow there to feed you." So the brook dried up, so he had to go somewhere else. He got direction. The widow at Zarephath would not have found her miracle unless Elijah had obeyed God. If the brook had never dried up, then he had never gone to Zarephath. The widow would have made her own her cake. If you remember the story, he goes there and he finds this widow and she's gathering up sticks. And he says, "Hey, what you doing?" She said, "I'm gathering up sticks. I'm going to cook one last loaf of bread for me and my son to eat. And then we're going to die because we don't have anything else." Why? Because there's a famine and this guy's responsible for it. And so what does he tell him? "Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry to hear about that. I'm really sorry." No, he says, "Okay, do what you said, but give me the first loaf." Well, she just said it's going to be the only loaf. He said, "Give me the first loaf." Well, if she had not obeyed him, she'd have died. But she obeyed the word of the Lord from the prophet of the Lord. Now, you have to know it's from God to tell somebody, "Give me your last meal." People frown on that nowadays. But he said, "Give me your last one." But the meal and the oil never dried up during the whole famine. So God gave Elijah direction by the brook drying up. So when the provision ended there, he left and went somewhere else where the provision was. This is what helped us make our decision here. Sharon and I make our decision. And this has happened a lot in our life. And I'm going to give you some examples here in a minute, but I'm going to talk about another time. Another time, I like my little slide. See, little boy, he's looking for provision. He's looking, where is that provision? Where's that provision? I just love my graphics sometimes. That's just fun. Joshua chapter 5. Joshua chapter 5, verses 10 through 12. Now, this is at the end of the children of Israel have been in the wilderness for 40 years. Everybody that went and let the spies say, we can't go, we can't do it. They can't, you know, it can't happen. They had died off. And now this is just those that were born in the wilderness. And they had eaten manna the whole time. God had provided manna for them the whole time they are in the wilderness. Joshua chapter 5, verse 10 says, now the children of Israel camped in Gilgal and kept the Passover on the 14th day of the month at twilight on the plains of Jericho. And they ate of the produce of the land on the day after the Passover, unleavened bread and parched grain on the very same day. Listen to this. Then the manna ceased on the day after they had eaten the produce of the land, and the children of Israel no longer had manna, but they ate the food of the land of Canaan that year. They had gotten to where their inheritance was supposed to be, so God's provision for them until they got there, it ceased. So they had to figure out, these people, these kids, had been raised on manna, and it just showed up. They never had to provide for themselves. They had to just go out and collect. All they had to do is obey the word of the Lord, go out and collect manna and cook it. Don't get more than one day unless it's a sixth day. On the sixth day, get 2 days worth and then go on. They never had to provide for themselves. Well, nobody really ever provides for themselves. God provides for you, but the way you get that provision is changes in the seasons. So the manna ceased because they were on the border of the promised land. So God says, okay, now you're going to get your inheritance, and there's where my provision will be. You're going to have to move on from where I had provided for you before. They could have said, wait a minute. We can't do this. We need to go back in the wilderness where that manna was provided. Well, the manna's gone. Manna's gone. You can't go back when it's over. Okay? You can't keep going when it's over. It's time to move on to the promised provision, to the next way God provides for you. God does not want us getting so formulaic in our lives that we say, okay, if we do this, then this will happen, and you never have to trust God again. He wants you to trust him all the time. That's why he changes situations in our life. That's why things change. We all hate change. But let me hear it tell you, that's the only consistent thing in life is change. The only thing that's going to stay constant is change. Everything's going to change. Our bodies are going to change. Our lives will change. You may say, because back in the day, people would work at a place and they'd work there 25, 30 years and they'd retire, get them a watch, and then have their pension and all this kind of stuff. And that's how it used to work. It don't work that way anymore. It doesn't work that way anymore, mostly. So God wants us to understand sometimes he will guide us when the provision ends. So let me give you some examples in our lives. And I thought God had just revealed this to me one day. I was in prayer. I was in my quiet time in the morning. And all of a sudden, I began to think about how things had happened here. And we were going good. I'll get to that in a minute. But it seems to be kind of a rip. I don't know if I'm just too thick to get his direction before this happens or if this is just how he's chosen to do it these specific times. Now, other times, he's spoken to us and those kind of things. But back in the late 80s and early 90s, Sharon and I and my brother Rich and his wife Tanya and my best friend and their oldest sister, we were in a band, a gospel singing group. It was first called the Holcomb Sisters. Then me and Rich joined in. So then it was the Holcomb Sisters and the No Defeat Band because that was one of the songs that Tanya had written. Well, then their oldest sister left, quit traveling with us. And so there wasn't a Holcomb in there. Well, she wasn't a Holcomb then either. So we said, there's no Holcombs. Let's just call it the No Defeat Band. So we changed it to No Defeat Band. Well, we were what you call weekend warriors for years after years, we would just go on the weekends. We would go and sing at churches and stuff. We did homecomings. There are some churches. We did 5-6 homecomings every year. We'd go to the same churches. And those of you that don't know what homecomings is, it's the anniversary of the church. And you'd have a special service, typically with a special speaker on Sunday morning. Then you'd have dinner on the grounds. You know, everybody'd be a potluck, and then we'd have what they call a singing. It's like a concert, and you would have a special group come, and they would sing do a set, and then local artists would do a middle set, and then the special guests would do the last set. And we were the special guests most every place we went. So we did those, and so we started doing that on the weekends, and we started getting really busy. We were booked 6 months, 8 months in advance, you know, all this kind of stuff. Well, we just began to believe God wanted us to do this for a living, do this full time. And so we took a trip one summer. We took our vacation, went to North Carolina and Virginia and up in the East Coast and did some touring and did some dates up there. And we just felt like it was God calling us to do that. Well, there's different things that happen, and God used some direction and things to get us on the road. So we bought us an old bus, a 1954 model GMC 4104 that a good Christian brother sold us. And that thing, the engine needed overhauling, but we were novices. We didn't know anything. So anyway, we got this old bus, and we started traveling coast to coast. And we were going back and forth, East Coast, West Coast. So on one of our trips to the West Coast, we were down going into the Silicon Valley, into one of the towns there, Sunnyvale, and just south of San Jose. And so to get there, we had to go through Gilroy and that area, and then go over Mount Madonna through Hecker Pass to get back down into the valley. Well, I'm a novice big rig driver, but I had heard that you go down the mountain in the same gear that you go up the mountain. It's a 3-speed. This bus was just a 3-speed, and it wasn't a 4 on the floor. It was a 3 on the floor, which is, for that big of a bus, I don't know why it was only a 3-speed. But anyway, it was a 54 model. So we get up there, and we're going up, and we're just crawling. We're in first gear, and we're crawling up this mountain. And so we get to the crest, and you know it's a little bit of a flat spot, and so I'm wanting to make some time, you know, so I start going through the gears, and I get in third, but then all of a sudden we start going down. Well, this was before they had synchronizers in the transmission, so you had to double clutch. You had to clutch it to get out of a gear and then let off and clutch again to get in another gear. Except the engine and the transmission had to be synchronized in their RPMs for it to go into that gear. So when you're going down a hill, the transmission's going 1 speed, and you got to find the timing of the engine to rev it. Well, I could not find the timing, and so we're going down the mountain in neutral. And I'm hitting those brakes going, shh, and we're going these hairpin turns and stuff. It was just crazy, and I'm trying to get it in. I never got it in gear until we got to the bottom. And we were going like 90 miles. I mean, we were going fast. And so much so we had a microwave strapped to our table, dining room table, and there was a couch across from it. Well, the straps broke loose, and the microwave ended up in Tanya, my sister-in-law's lap. So anyway, we pull into the church in Sunnyvale, and we pull in front of the church. We get out, and the pastor had lunch for us ready, dinner ready for us so we could eat before we set up in the church and got ready. And this was going to be on a Friday night. He had never had anything on Friday night before. So we pull up, we kill the bus, we get out, we go in and eat, we have a great time stuff. We get back in the bus to move it because we unloaded everything. And then we're going to move the bus to the side of it, and it wouldn't go anywhere. And this pastor just happened to be in a family that used to be a traveling singing group, and he knew buses. He says, "You've burnt your clutch. You burnt your clutch up." I said, "Okay." Well, he just happened to know that it's going to cost about $1,300 to fix that clutch. And we had $235 in the account. So we got several people, and we actually just pushed the bus back against the building and all this kind of stuff. But we just, you know, we were dumb enough to just say, "Okay, all right, so we're just going to sing." And so the pastor, he thought we were just faith-filled and all this kind of stuff because we just acted like it was okay. And so we're changing to get ready for the service, and I'm in the back there's a curtain in the middle. The girls are getting dressed up front because that's where the bathroom is, and they can do their hair stuff. Me and my brother and Butch, our bass player, we're in the back getting ready, and I'm towards the back, and I'm changing. I'm saying, God, you got to do something. I said, because we don't have the money. I said, if you don't come through for us tonight, I got to buy bus tickets for all these folks and get them home. Because that's the cheapest way I was going to get them home. I couldn't get them flights. So $235, I thought, I can get them a one-way trip home on the bus. And so I just prayed that. And I was, you know, I was responsible. I was the president of it. I was the oldest of the guys. And it was just one of those things. So we go in, and the pastor said, listen, this is the first time we've ever had anything on Friday night, and most of my big givers are actually out of town. I said, okay, that's fine. So we get up there, and we start singing, and we start off with a song called I've Never Seen the Righteous Forsaken. I've never seen the righteous forsaken or God's seed begging bread. That's how the song goes. And it's an up-tempo thing. We kicked off with a really good up-tempo number. And as we ended that song, the pastor got up and said, wait a minute. He said, and he told the crowd what the story was. And he said, I've never seen so much faith. He said, I know what this is going to take. I know how much money this is going to take. I know it. He said, they don't have the money. But he said, they just act like it's no big deal. There's so much faith. And I'm thinking, oh, you don't know, Bo. And I'm playing bass is what I'm doing. Oh, Butch wasn't with us, was he? No, because I was playing bass. That's right. I was on the bass. And so he says, so we're going to go ahead and take the offering right now. And we're just going to take it and we're going to believe God. So he prayed over it. And so they started receiving the offering. There was 35 people there that night, 30, 35 people, something like that. So they take the offering. We start singing the next song. I can tell this story, I promise. She's helping the Holy Spirit's helping me tell the story when I know it. So anyway, we finish the second song and he interrupts us again. And he says, I got to tell what God's done. He says, we collected the offering, and I went back into the office, which was behind the stage, and I started counting the offering. And he said, I knew something was up when the very first check was $500. Wow. And so he counted all up, and we got $1,381.63 in that offering on a Friday night with only 35 people there. God miraculously provided. He did that so many times when we were on the road. He did that so many times. Fast forward to Columbus, Georgia. We were on our way. We had gone to Columbus, Georgia, sang in a church there, and then we were going to leave that next morning and go to Tampa, Florida, because the Pentecostal Church of God General Convention was going to be there. We were going to sing at it, but they were going to use our sound system for the convention because we had a sound system. One of the executive's sons, we had sang at his church. He pastored in Arkansas. We'd sang at his church. He said, why don't we use y'all's sound system? And we'll pay y'all for it. And so that way you can get some money there and stuff like that. Because we were just going to sing for the exposure. You know, when you're on the road, everybody wants you to sing for exposure. It's like, we got overexposed is the problem. We wouldn't get no money for stuff. But anyway, but prior to that, Rich, my brother, had really been sensing that he wanted to get into church ministry. Specifically youth ministry. He just felt called to it. But we were trying to get a record deal. We were talking to some different producers in Nashville and all this kind of stuff. We were working. We were on the roll. We were about ready to do that. But we get to Columbus, Georgia, and we're heading out of town, and we're driving, and all of a sudden, I'm driving, and all of a sudden, the bus, the engine just starts revving up, and we're not going anywhere. And I'm, what in the world? And so I pull over to the side of the road. Long story short, we thrashed our third member. And if you know what that is, that's on the axle to where the transmission comes, and it connects with the axle, which it connects, the third member actually connects it to the wheels that drives the wheels. So we thrashed that part. And so we were sitting there, and then this guy drives up, and he and another guy had driven up, and they were talking to us, and they said, I think this is what happened to you. And so they tow us. He had a wrecking yard, so they tow us to the wrecking yard, and we pull the bus in the wrecking yard. Well, we start looking for a third member. They try to start helping us find a third member. Well, we found one that was similar to ours. Again, we're not mechanics. None of us are mechanics. We find one that's similar to ours, and they source the part, and they're going to put it in for us. Well, they've got to cut the housing so that third member can fit. I should have known right then it was not a good thing. So, again, we couldn't get back on the road, so we called ahead, and this is before cell phones, so we called ahead and told them in Tampa, we're stuck in Columbus, Georgia. And so the guy and his dad bring a van, and they come up from Tampa to Columbus, Georgia, and get Rich and Tanya and our sound system so that they can start the convention. We weren't supposed to sing for a few nights, so they were taking them back. So they took them back, and Sharon and I were stuck in Columbus, sleeping in these people's basement. Again, we didn't have the money to do a lot of stuff, so we were sleeping in these strangers' basement. You talk about scary. We weren't sure. We didn't know these people, but they were kind to us. We slept in the basement. So we just could not seem to get it done. Couldn't get the bus fixed. There just seemed to be no answer. So we went to the airport, and I think we had $1,000 cash, I think, in the bank account. And so I tried to rent a car, and you can't rent a car with cash. I said, I just need to get to Tampa. I need to rent one way to, and here's cash. I'll give you all this cash up front. No, no, you can't do that. And so those of you young ones, Google this. We sat under a bank of payphones. They had this bank of payphones against the wall, and we sat down underneath it because we'd been calling around trying to get ourselves out. We could not get out of Columbus, Georgia. Sharon and I were stuck in Columbus, Georgia. Love y'all in Columbus, but we were just stuck there. So we finally, a pastor friend of ours drove his car up from Tampa and got Sharon and I, and we went to Tampa. We left our bus there with the idea that we would just get somebody to fix it and we'd come back and get it. That bus never left Columbus, Georgia. We got to Tampa, and we couldn't find anybody to fix it, so we caught a ride with a cousin that had a van and a travel trailer, and so we loaded the stuff we had with us, and we loaded up from Tampa, and we got to Houston, and then from Houston, we had another relative come down from Dallas to Houston, pick us up, and take us back home. That was the end of our career. After we got everything done, and then we borrowed our cousin's van from up in Dallas, and Sharon and I drove to Columbus to get everything else off the bus and bring it back home. Come to find out, a pastor friend of ours, he was at the convention. They had requested prayer for us. His brother owns a trucking company in Columbus, Georgia. Didn't know. It was just one of those things, see? It just wasn't time. So we left the road, and we quit singing. Rich went into youth ministry. That's where he started his youth ministry. To this day, he's been almost 40 years in ministry, church ministry. Started youth ministry, then he was associate pastor, assistant pastor, senior pastor. Now he's a church consultant, helping other churches learn. See, the provision ended. Fast forward to 2015, we're living, Sharon and I had just built, 3 years prior, had built a brand new home that we designed. We picked out all, I mean, it wasn't a custom built home. It was a track home that we picked all the interior stuff out. And we picked out what things we wanted on it and that kind of thing. We loved that. We still to this day love that house because it was built specifically for us. We'd been in almost 3 years. A friend of mine, we would have coffee periodically, we'd go into Denton, Texas. We were living in Little Elm, Texas. We went to Denton, and he was living in Lake Dallas, so we'd meet in Denton, have coffee and fellowship, have dinner, just kind of hang out. And he started telling us about this church in Austin that a friend of his kept telling him, we got a church available in Austin that's closed that we need to reopen. You need to go do that. And he said, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to go to Austin. Well, the next week we meet, sometime later, we meet again for coffee, and he says, my friend keeps bugging me, saying, you need to go reopen this church in Austin. They said, I don't want to be part of the organization that church is in. I don't want to be that, no. So then, later, we meet again, and a third time, he says, this guy will not leave me alone. He said, I finally had to tell him, listen, no, we do not want to move to Austin. We don't want to do that. And at that time, I was just filling pulpits. I didn't have an outlet for, it was like God was giving me all this revelation and all this stuff going on, and I could not get a place to preach. And it's like, what's going on? And I just felt like that this was our opportunity. So I said, since you said no for the third time, do you mind if I check into it? He said, no, I don't mind. So I called down here, talked to the bishop. He says, do you know anything about South Austin? Of course, my sister lived in Round Rock for all these years. And I said, well, that's where they get the weird part of Keep Austin Weird, South Austin. He said, oh, you do know it then. I said, yeah. So, again, long story short, we moved to Austin in 2015. We moved down here. We sold that house. It was just 3 years old. We sold it, and we made $30,000 on that house. We were able to hire movers. We were able to put a sizable down payment on a home. God provided because that was his. That was the opportunity. God actually spoke to Sharon, and she agreed to the move. I told, because I know my family thinks I drag her everywhere, but I said, God, you got to tell her. You got to, it's got to be okay with her. And she said, she told a friend, she said, if one person comes to the Lord, it's worth every house I can give up. And I said, yes, we can go. So I'm working part-time, I'm working full-time remotely for insurance, doing as an insurance adjuster, insurance underwriter in commercial insurance. And I'm doing it remotely. And I felt like in 2016, I felt like the Lord called, said, I want you to quit your job and work on ministry full-time. And I'd done enough stupid things that I said, God, I don't want to do stupid again. I've jumped and done too many things and made so many mistakes. I don't want to do this. So Sharon and I actually prayed about it for a long time. For at least a couple of months, we prayed about this. And we both felt like God was calling me to leave my job and focus on ministry full time. Again, we're trying to get this church in South Austin rolling. So it was my last day was October 31st. So in the 1st of September, they gave me a going away party. I went up to Dallas, had a going away party, came back. So I was diagnosed back in 2006 with type 2 diabetes. So I back at the time, I had to go to the doctor every 3 months. So I was there in November, and my primary care doctor said, I want you to go have a calcium scoring done before you come back in February. Well, I said, okay. She said, now your insurance probably won't pay for it, but it's only $75. I said, I can pay $75. And again, I was on Cobra from my insurance. So I go to have my calcium scoring done. I get the results back before I go to the doctor, and I got a 99%. I thought, dude, I aced that thing. So I go to my doctor, and I'm all pumped. And I said, boy, I did great on that. I got a 99%. She said, no, think golf. You want it lower. She said, what this says is you got more calcium in your arteries than 99% of the guys your age. I said, oh, that's not good. She said, you need a cardiologist. And sure enough, Sharon already had a cardiologist. I liked him. I went to him, and he says, it's not if you have blockage, just how much blockage you have. So I need you to do a nuclear stress test. So this is two weeks. I'm doing this stuff. So I'll go have a nuclear stress test. The doctor's going to be on vacation. He said, when I get back in 3 weeks, I'll contact you and let you know the results. And I said, okay. Well, 2 days after I had the stress test, he calls. He's on vacation. He said, I had my partner there check out the results. And he said, you're not getting oxygen to the back part of your heart when you exercise. And I said, then I won't exercise. He said, that's not the answer. So he said, you need to go see a heart surgeon. No. He said, we need to do a heart cath. And so cut 2 weeks later, I go in. He does a heart cath. He said, listen, once I get in, if I see a blockage, I'll just put a stent in while we're in there. It'll be done. Well, unbeknownst to me, while I'm recovering, he tells Sharon, that's just a 20-year fix. And I was 53 at the time. He said, we'd have to redo that. So he said, he's going to need a bypass. Okay. So he says, now you need to go talk to a heart surgeon. So we find a heart surgeon with Austin Heart, and we go and we meet with him, and he's going to go on vacation on spring break in 3 weeks. 3 weeks. He said, well, my last day there, he said, let me see if I can fit you in. I've got 6 already planned. I said, can you do me first before you get tired? He said, oh, no, I do these all the time. So sure enough, I was like, he put right in the middle of the pack. And so I go and I have, and they didn't crack me open because the arteries on the front, they went in through one of my ribs here. They collapsed my left lung, went in through one of the ribs, and they did a bypass. Well, I did not know that he had told Sharon, which they're telling Sharon stuff while I'm still asleep. They're not waiting until I'm awake, but anyway. So anyway, he said, I don't know if I bypassed all of it, so you need another heart cath. So in 2 weeks, no, it wasn't 2 weeks, it was about a month or so, I went and had a heart cath. We'd gotten everything. The miracle of this is, while I'm having this heart surgery, I have Cobra insurance, so it's covering most stuff, but I have deductibles. I have tons of deductibles. Well, people are hearing about this. Sharon is posting stuff on Facebook, and people that we went to church with back in the 90s that moved off and live up north, people like they're telling their Bible study group about it, and they take up an offering. They send us $500. We've got people, we just started getting checks in the mail from people. People started giving us money. And then I had one person come to me and said, listen, I want to pay for all your deductibles. When you pay it, you tell me, show me how much it is, and I'll write you a check. All my deductibles, I was so, God miraculously provided during that time. However, after I got well, that brook dried up. We got to where we couldn't make the house payment because I didn't have a job. And I tried to go back to that job and they couldn't put me back in. And I tried to get another. It's like God was blocking me from getting a job. And so we had to sell that house before we got evicted. So we thought, okay, we've done this before. We made $30,000 and we'd been in this house 3 years or so. We made 30 grand on our last house. We'll make this much here. Hey, so what we'll do is we'll buy us an RV and we'll live in an RV. That's what we'll do. Well, then the inspection came in and they said, there's something wrong with the foundation. It's a four-year-old house. It's because we moved into it after it was 6 months old. It's a four-year-old house. It can't be anything wrong with the foundation. Because we saw some cracks. We had somebody come and check it out. It was the builder's guy came and checked it out. They said, oh, no, it's just settling. It's just settling. That's all it is. It's just settling. Okay, all right. See, not an expert. Sure enough, they kept coming down, and we made nothing off of that house. Basically nothing. See, that brook dried up. Well, we're still in South Austin at the time, but we had to move to San Marcos because the district, the denomination we were with, their headquarters, they had an apartment up there for people that needed come. So they said, here, come stay in the apartment for a little while, and y'all can just live there. So we went from a nearly 2,000-square-foot house to a 400-square-foot apartment with two dogs. Upstairs that I had to carry them down the emergency exit, the stairs out there to take them potty in the middle of the night and then come back up. So then South Austin was going along and it just never worked. It just never happened. We could not. So I finally told the bishop and I said, listen, because they were helping us, kind of propping us up. And I said, listen, let's just quit spending money on this. It's just not working. So we shut down. You want to talk about depressing? It was depressing. So we got the opportunity. The parsonage next door to the district office came available. It's another 2,200 square foot house. It's an older house. We get the critter of the month in the house. Just depends on what month it is and what critter is coming through the house. And we're having to deal with that and stuff. Everybody loves it. It's a beautiful place. It's really nice. It's a nice place. The house is somewhat, but we had a house, okay? We had a home. We were in it. So one day, some people come from Cedar Park. Some ladies come from Cedar Park and said, we hear that we are part of the Pentecostal Church of God. They didn't know they were part of the, yeah? Well, we haven't had a pastor for 2 months. Our pastor just up and left. Well, when the original pastor passed away, Bishop said he was going to help with it. Well, the guy that took over said, oh, no, we got it handled. We're good. So he didn't get involved. Well, long story short, he left. So he said, can you go to Cedar Park? I need you for 6 months. Can you go up there and bring some structure? Because they weren't incorporated. They didn't have any bylaws, all this kind of stuff. And I said, can you go up there for 6 months? And I said, if that's what you want me to do, because he's my authority, is that what you want to do? Yeah, we go up there. So we come to Cedar Park, to Trinity Tabernacle Church. And we come and we grow it from 14 to 8, like really fast. I mean, we had the first Sunday we had church. We had a meeting on Wednesday before our first Sunday, and we had 14 or 15 people there. Well, a big bunch of those people never showed up again. So then we started working on it, started growing, and then get toward the end of the 6 months, and those that were left said, well, why can't y'all be our pastors? We like y'all. We just felt connected to the church, and I talked to Bishop about it. He said, okay. So the district board appointed us as permanent pastors. Then he said, it's going to take them, 3 to 5 years to get it established and all this kind of stuff. Well, great. And so we're rocking along. This is 2019. This is November 2019. Well, how many knows in February, the whole world shut down. But we're going to make it through. We weren't even online yet, but it took us 2 weeks of missing services for us to get online. We got online, got going. So we got to going. Well, then all of a sudden, just last year, we had an influx of people come in. Oh, this is it. We had an influx of people come in, and, the finances were doing okay. Even during COVID, God provided. I mean, we had 8 people, but we were able to pay cash to fix our parking lot, to repave our parking lot and stripe it to $18,000. I wrote a check for $18,000. Didn't have to borrow any money or nothing. God provided for us. I mean, miraculous things. We had an air conditioner go out, and God provided for us. We had savings. We had $6,000 in savings, and God got us a new, brand new air conditioner for $5,500, so we were able to pay for that. God provided until the brook dried up. And just this past year, just this year, all those people that came, they came from another church, and they had their own ideas of how a church should be run. And they wanted me to do different things and be a different kind of pastor than I am. And I said, I can't be that. This is who I am. And so the provision dried up. And so I began to pray, God, if you want us to stick it out, I'm here. We're driving an hour on Sunday mornings. I can't be in the community. It's just so hard. But God, if that's what you want, I want it. I believe that you would provide for us. You'll get us through this. And I just kept believing that, beginning to think that God. Oh, and the other thing was, we had 2 renters in the church. We had 2 other churches renting from us, and that was paying my salary. And so I was able to, but then one of the churches, they grew too big. They had too many kids. They didn't have any room to put the kids. They still had room to put adults, but they didn't have room to put kids. They were growing so much, so they had to go someplace else. He said, I hate this. He said, we love this church. Our people love this church. In fact, if you want to sell it to us, we'd like to buy it. And I said, well, I can't do that. I'd get in lots of trouble if I tried to sell it to you. So we lost them. And so we were left with just one that's renting from us, and it wasn't as much as what the other church was paying. But we could get by. Sharon and I did the numbers. Sharon and I can get by with what I'm making there. I've been elected to a position at the district. Not much money there, but between these 2 jobs and her job, we're making it. God's going to take care of us. And it just kept dwindling and dwindling and dwindling. And I really felt like God, I felt like we were supposed to merge churches with the other one that was renting from us. They're in the same denomination as we are. They're the same. So I just felt like we should merge with those churches. And I told this story before, but God really did this. I'm trying to wrap up and finish up quick. This to show you how God really can lead this way. Again, this is not the only way God leads. Remember, I follow opportunity. When God opens a door, I pursue it until it smashes me in the face. Okay? Until that door is shut in my face. I'll follow opportunities until God does it. So anyway, we prayed about it, and we were supposed to go to Gatlinburg, Tennessee, back in June to go for our general assembly. Me being the district chief operating officer, I'm supposed to be there to work with the others, to do strategy, be on the general board, that sort of thing. So we were going to go. So we had a meeting with the family on Friday before we left on Saturday. We're talking to them, just kind of dealing with some issues and stuff. And it was a great meeting. We just kind of, everything gelled. everything kind of gelled and stuff. We were getting ready to leave, and I was reminding them that we were going to be gone the next two Sundays. And I said, this next Sunday, Rich and Tanya will be here. Then the following Sunday, Mylon Avery, who pastors Austin Alive Church, which is the one that rents from us, and they meet in the afternoon, that he will be covering. He'll be doing the worship. He'll be preaching. So be sure and be here. And the father of the group said, you know what? I said, what? And we're about to walk out the door. He said, you know what? I always thought we'd merge churches. And, you know, right before that, I told God, listen, I need some confirmation. I need a word from a man of God. I was thinking a prophet, somebody that operates in the prophetic. When I get to the general convention or assembly, when I get there where all the preachers are, somebody's going to come up to me and give me a confirming word. But this guy, he says, you know what? I always thought. And I asked him later, he never even thought about the ramifications of it, who's going to lead it and all this kind of thing. I just thought we'd merge churches. And Sharon and I get in the car to go head home, and she said, what do you make of that? And I said, well, I guess God just gave me a confirmation, but, you know, we still prayed about it and stuff. So this is how God led. God can lead you. He can guide you. We don't know where we're going. Sharon and I don't know what we're doing. I've got some ideas. I've got some things that I'm working on, some plans that I'm working on, some things we want to do. But God is, we're following him wherever he leads us, however he leads us. This is a teaching moment that I wanted to share with you. This is a teaching moment. When the brook dries up, God's got provision someplace else. However, there are times when it starts drying up, when the provision's ending like the children of Israel, but he had provision for them already set up where they were already going. So it's not always when it gets tough, you got to do something else. But you got to know, you got to sense the difference. You got to know the difference in the timing. You got to know, and I am not one to, I used to be one that would bail on things so quickly. I mean, I would bail on things, but we've given nearly 4 years to this church, over 4 years. April was 4 years. And we've really given our heart and soul to this. We really felt like God brought us here for a purpose. And what I've understood is God was bringing me here to get this building ready because Austin Alive had sold their building 5 years ago and they were looking for a permanent home and they couldn't buy one for what they sold their building for. And they've been trying to find a permanent home, couldn't find anything. They started renting from us. And now what's happening is God is providing a building and some property free of charge for them to move into, and it become theirs. God is providing for them when he's directing Sharon and I to go a different direction. This is how God works. He will give you direction. Sometimes he'll open a door that you have to walk through, and sometimes he'll close a door that you have to walk away from. But you've got to understand, when provision ends, you've got to know what God wants you to do. You've got to get a word from the Lord. You've got to make a decision and say, God, I'm going to stick this out. If you want me to stick it out, we're going to stick it out. If you want me to go, we'll go. But just be willing to do what he's called you to do. And then he confirmed his word with signs following, just like he did in Acts. He confirmed his word in us. One of the sermons that we heard while we were at the General Assembly from our General Bishop, he just confirmed so many things in me and just really confirmed that thing that he'd already confirmed. He double confirmed. And then another thing, staff meeting, our staff, we talked about it, and they were totally in agreement. Talked to the bishop, he was in agreement. Talked to the Mylon Avery, who's the pastor of Austin Alive. He's actually on the board of this church. We talked about it. They were excited because they believe this is what God's. We renovated this building. We brought it to the 21st century. We made it modern looking. When we came in, it was looked like a senior citizens church. You know, it was a good building, the good structural building. But there's 2.5 acres on a prime road, on the main road in Cedar Park, which hardly any of our churches in our denomination are. They're always off in a neighborhood. This is one of the best properties in our district, and God's given it to Austin Alive Church because God is faithful. And I've got to hold on to that because he provided for them. He's going to provide for me in what he has for me to do next. He wants to provide for you. Don't get discouraged when the provision ends. Don't say, this is it. He's got a widow in Zarephath that is struggling, that needs a miracle. And you've got to go to where that is. You've got to be obedient so that she can receive her miracle. Or you've got to proceed on to where God told you to go. Just keep going, because the old way he provided, he's going to make a new way to provide. So you've got to decide when provision ends what the method is, how he wants to meet you.
I'm glad you took the time to listen to the James Hooper podcast. If you'd do me a favor, give us a like. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss any episodes. Also, rate and review us so others can find the podcast. If you want to contact us, go to jhimonline.org or send us an email at info@jhimonline.org. Until next time, have a great day.